months, and you knock out a finished work in record time. The novelist Mark Saltzman tells of all the agonizing missteps that led him to waste 5 years trying to write a follow-up to his first novel, The Soloist. When he reread the new manuscript, he realized it was bad, and as he told Lawrence Weschler in The New Yorker, he was destroyed. His wife suggested that a change of scenery in the form of a 5-week stay at a New England artist's retreat would do him good. "I went," he says, "though without any particular intention of writing. That book had hurt me enough. I just wanted to exist as if in a kind of Zen retreat. And you know what? It was like waking from a bad dream. All of a sudden, everything was like a gift. The fall colors, the sounds, the little homemade cookies in the picnic baskets. But mainly the removal of all the reminders of art as a profession, as a way of making money or gaining a reputation and the like. Rather, here I was in a community of people who seemed dedicated to art almost like a sacred pursuit." Saltzman's novel is set in a Carmelite cloister and tells a story of a nun who suddenly and mysteriously matures as a poet. In midlife, she is blessed with a radiance that feeds her creative outpourings and brings her closer to God. The cause, it turns out, is a brain tumor which is operable. Her spiritual crisis is whether to have the tumor removed and return to her dull existence without death hovering, or to revel in the grace and beauty that has entered her life, even as it costs her that life. It's a novel about a woman in a groove, albeit a terminal one. The combination of story, change of scenery, and Saltzman's torment provided him with a breakthrough. "Suddenly, sitting there in my cabin," he says, "I realized that all along I'd been living my nun's life myself, and once I saw that, the book wrote itself in 5 weeks, with me in a state that I can only describe as euphoric. The words were coming to me with labels attached, put me next to him. And when it was done, the way I felt about that book made everything that had come before worthwhile." I love happy endings, and Saltzman's tale is proof that grooves exist and can, with luck and pluck, be self-induced. There also are mega-grooves, long stretches of time when piece after piece comes out of you with satisfying results. You don't realize you're in this state until you're too far along or it's gone, but it often starts with a mega-breakthrough. Many creative thinkers have an epiphanic moment where they make a quantum leap forward in ability and vision. It may not be obvious to the untrained eye, but you know it, and it shows in your work. One for me happened in 1969. I was married, 28 years old, and living in upstate New York. I was unassailed by distractions. No artificially imposed schedules, no meetings, no inconvenient commuting. The phone did not ring for days. Like Saltzman, I was in an artist's retreat, only it was a decrepit farm that my husband and I worked. Everything was efficient, focused, with purpose. When I rowed a boat, kneaded bread, or mowed the grass, I felt linked to ancient physical chores. Everything, from sweeping out corners to thinking about how a compost heap works, informed my creative efforts. It was the year of the Woodstock Festival, which took place just over the mountains from the farm. It was the year the New York Mets won the World Series. I listened to the games devoutly on the kitchen radio, and even Tom Seaver's pitching motion found its way into a dance called the 100s. I made more dance that summer than I ever have. My breakthrough arrived in a piece called The Fugue, which was a set of 20 variations on a 20-count theme for 3 dancers that I took from the fugal structure of Bach's A Musical Offering. Mind you, I didn't actually use Bach's music. The fugue is performed in silence. I was still a rustic who couldn't afford music, live or recorded. Plus, I wanted my dances to stand on their own feet without support of anyone's music. As ever, it was all about self-reliance. But in studying the score and imagining how it translated into dance, I began to see the logic in Bach's majestic notes. How he would take a phrase and reverse it, or invert it, or switch it from the right hand to the left, or reverse the inversion. It struck me that, given the symmetry of the human body and how its joints function, you could do the same thing with dance steps. Take 3 steps forward. That's one move. Take 3 steps backwards. That's another. Now take those 3 steps to your left, then your right. That's 2 more moves. Now switch everything to the other foot. Now run it backwards, or more accurately, in retrograde, like film running backwards through a projector. I imagined milk being sucked back into a bottle after being poured. Now turn the body 90 degrees to the right or left to face a new front. Now add rhythmic alterations so that all these phrases can be done in the original tempo, in double time, or in half time. Now insert a quick arbitrary movement, say 3 fast hand claps, into one of the basic phrases. I call this stuffing. Now take these moves on one person and add a second dancer, and a third, each making canonic entrances 2 counts after the other. Think of row, row, row your boat, and how everyone enters fixed beats after one another. It gets complicated, but in devising the fugue 1 variation a day, outdoors, in the pasture on sunny days, indoors when it rained, I discovered I had given myself a completely new way of handling movement. Reversal, inversion, retrograde, retrograded inversion, stuffing, canon, and so on. It was a vocabulary sufficiently rich with possibilities and variations that I would be using and building on it for the rest of my life. I didn't know if other choreographers knew this like the back of their hand and had never bothered to tell me, but it was a revelation to me. It was as if I had been painting with black, white, and red, and someone said, "Twyla, have you ever heard of the color blue? And green? And yellow? And all the shades of the spectrum in between?" I could finally speak. I didn't realize then that this was a choreographic language for the rest of my life, but I sensed it was a breakthrough.